Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. This is your host, Maruf Yusuf, and I have some exciting news to share with you today. Over the last 3 years, I have interviewed many entrepreneurs on this podcast, Muslims who love what they do and make a good living, and shared their stories. Many of you asked me the same question over and over. How can you also be like these successful guests? But what you may not know is that I also talked one-on-one with thousands of Muslim entrepreneurs, professionals, and seekers from all walks of life in the last 10 years. Their question was the same. How do we live our lives as Muslims with meaning and impact? Through these conversations, I have noticed patterns in what successful Muslims do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do what they do. I have taken all of these insights along with my learnings from hundreds of books and put them into a book called 7 Steps to Success in Deen and Dunya. This book is based on the Quran and Sunnah and proven business principles. It is for those Muslims who do not limit Islam only to masjids or prayers, daily salah, but see the Islam as a way of life. The book introduces a new way to live for you as a Muslim, inshallah. With a whole year to read and implement these steps, you have nothing to lose, but a lot to gain. And if for any reason you're not happy, you can get a full refund. So take action today and get the book on Amazon as a Kindle, paperback, hardcover, or audiobook on Audible, or you can also get it via the link in the show description. Don't miss out on this opportunity. Get your copy of 7 Steps to Success in Deen and Dunya. Embark on a journey of a lifetime towards a more meaningful, impactful life as a Muslim, inshallah. Now, back to the show. Hey, assalamu alaikum. This is Maruf, your host on Muslims on Fire. Today I have a friend, my countryman. Actually, he's the first Uzbek I'm actually inviting to the show. He's a solo entrepreneur. Without further ado, let me introduce Babur. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam. So Babur, we will take a journey about your life, what's going on, what happened, where did it start, all of it. So first, we always start with the question, what are the things you remember as a childhood? What do you think those memories or experiences that shaped you who you are today? That's how we're going to start.
So it's a good question. One of the things that I remember from my childhood is that I always wanted to do something. Meaning, it wasn't about the education, right? Maybe it's not the best thing to say, but I was always interested in creating something, selling something, you know, kind of being an entrepreneur, but at that time I didn't realize that. And the biggest thing that shaped my life was an access to the internet. And I got my first internet access back in 1997. I was lucky enough that my father was very technologically advanced guy. He was he loved technology. I had my first Apple computer back in 93 or something like that. So he got this access to the internet. It was something very new, and we had very slow connection, but we got connected to the World Wide Web. And my first impression was it was like something from out of this world, because I saw a Yahoo page and it was a Yahoo directory, and it was so fascinating that it just blew me away. Since that time, I got interested in technology.
I see. So what you're saying is that in childhood, you had this like early access, let's say that, right? Your early access to the internet. If you don't mind me telling, like, where were you born? Like, what kind of family you were born, and where did you study? Is that possible?
Yeah, absolutely. I was born in capital city, Tashkent.
Okay.
And up until 12 years old, I went to Uzbek local school. Mm-hmm. And then I was studying in Uzbek language. And when I turned 12 years old, my parents transferred me to private school, British private school.
Interesting.
I graduated my school in English language. Most of my classmates were wealthy people, and I was studying with people from abroad. I had access to these people. I wasn't from a very rich family, but I was from a
middle class.
Upper middle class. I was upper middle class. And back then, my tuition fees were around $7,000, which was hell of a lot of money.
A lot of money.
For 96, 97 per year. But we were not like living in a luxury. We were very stable upper middle class.
I see. Wow, that puts a lot of different perspective, right? Because I also come from Uzbekistan, like southern part, like, Kashtaryo. I cannot imagine Uzbek kids going to private school, but mashallah, I mean, your parents like put a lot of effort in education. Now we can, so this is a lesson, right? Education always pays off.
It does. In a way, it paid off me in a broadening my way of thinking, because I had early access to foreigners. My teachers were from abroad, and I had this access. So I was privileged. I'd say I was privileged, and I admit that.
No, absolutely. Like, we take what the life gives, we gotta be grateful. But that's good to know. That's good to know that there are parents who pay. Like, I mean, if you think about it, right? We can always, as you say, that we can always connect the dots looking backwards. And in my experience, I did the same. But I think if I look even in my own personal life today, like when I was about your, as you said, 12, what happened to us? I mean, of course, I come from a poor family. My parents couldn't pay. But what did happen for me in my case was that I went to a Turkish gymnasium. If you remember, there were times, the Turkish lycees. So I went to join one of them. I just changed my mind, like totally different, like speaking. My first like mind-blowing thing was having access to English, having like all those people. And the internet came later, much later. It's one of my like passion, like yours as well. But I feel you. What you're saying is I feel you. When you have the environment and those smaller things, it doesn't have to be big, just really makes a huge difference to your childhood and like where you are today. And we are seeing it again. Wow. That's amazing. So that's good. You had a very interesting education. So tell me what happened. So after you've it was a high school, I guess, this private school, right? You finished it, then where do you go next?
I finished my high school, and my parents, obviously, I did it, I finished it with the English being a primary language. So I wouldn't be able to go and study at the Uzbek universities because I wasn't good at writing. Writing in Russian. So I would have a very big difficulty. And my parents were, you're not going to be studying here. You are going to go abroad.
We invested too much in you, not the way.
Yeah, we invested too much in you. So you don't have to, you can't lose that. And one of the first things was, we're going to be sending you to U.S. because back in 1997, I actually went to U.S. because my aunt was living here. My uncle was working here. I visited them as a tourist, and I fall in love with U.S. and everything about it. So, and then they were planning me to send to U.S. But one day when I came to my school, I saw an ad showing an opera house of Sydney Opera House and this bridge, beautiful Australian Sydney Bridge. And then it said, hey, students, if you want to study in Australia, call me. And his number was there. So I took that leaflet, I brought it to my father because I loved the picture.
Marketing, my good marketing, yeah?
It was a super good marketing. And then and the name was Michael, my name is Michael, I can help you, blah, blah, blah. So I took it to my father, and my father saw it, and he called this guy. Apparently he was a His name was Mikhail, but he
showed. Well, he improvised. He improvised.
Yeah. He actually migrated to Australia recently, like 3-4 years ago, and then came back to Uzbekistan to recruit students.
I see.
Which was, good thing to do, because if it wasn't him, then I wouldn't end up in Australia. And then all of a sudden, he was a super good marketer. He showed us the video. He put the video of Sydney, Australia. It was beautiful. It was amazing.
Opera House sold you.
Yeah, it was just amazing. The harbor, the beautiful view. And I was like, wow. And my father was like, that's good. And he said, hey, you know that? Sydney is going to have the Olympic Games in 2000. So it was the year when I was supposed to go. And he said, you will see the Olympic Games. And my father said, yep, okay, we'll do that. And then I came home and I was like, yeah, I'm going to go to Australia. I didn't even know where
you was. Australia.
Yeah, I was like, I'm going to Australia. I don't care about the
movie. I just mean to you. I just see the Statue of Liberty. I want to get the Opera House now.
Exactly. So after a few months of preparation and preparing and paying all the fees, I got my visa. And in August, I think 14 or something like that, 2000, I flew to Australia. So that's how my Australian journey began. And
so that means the first time you are going out for the first time, right, outside Uzbekistan for a long time.
It was first time I actually was back in Soviet Union. I went to Tunis, African country.
Okay.
Father was studying there. But the second time it was in 1997 when I flew to U.S.
Okay, but what I want to really understand is that was there longer periods of stay there, or would you just went there as a tourist? I just want to understand.
I just went there for Tunis. I went there for 1 month, mm-hmm. and for U.S. I went there for 2 weeks.
Okay, I mean, still a short period of time because it doesn't give you time to get to know the culture and you know. But Australia was different. Australia is a study now. This is real.
Yeah, Australia shaped me.
Exactly. That's interesting to know.
I had a very thick Australian accent, which I lost now.
Okay. That would be cool. We do have some Uzbeks from Australia, Melbourne these days, there are people going there. So, what did you study there? Like, what was your main
topic? I majored in information technology.
IT, okay.
Yeah, IT, information technology, software development. And ever since I've been working in the industries, that's why I kind of know technology inside out, because since I was a child,
you were in it.
I was in it. You know, I breathe, I work, I make my money in technology industry. So I've been there for since I remember myself. You
know? That's good. So one of the things that really always interests me is that, you see, like in every interview we do with our audience, especially interviewers, guests, is that, so one thing is for sure, like whenever you look at them, for example, like yourself, we know their passion is, you know, where they really want to be, because somehow they figured it out and they make this as a way of living, right? They make, earn money. And once they do that, like the life becomes not this hard thing, but it's something to enjoy. You know what I mean? You live, you enjoy. Of course, I'm not saying it's going to be everything rosy, rainbows, but since you have this passion, the drive, in your case, it's IT sector, right? You are in it. Like when you look at the world, you don't see the problems. You see like opportunities, you know, there's a problem, I'm going to get it. This is a problem, I'm going to get it. So question is that, like one of the things that we also want to inspire the listeners is that, how do you find that thing you really care about? For example, in your case, it's IT. In my case, it's something similar, you know, IT as well. So how did it happen to you? What was it? When you look back in your life, what do you think was the main thing that guided you this way?
Yeah. First of all, it was the new thing. It was something new. Technology was evolving. Back in 2000, not everybody had internet access, even in Australia. And it wasn't something very new. Futuristic, you know, people like myself who are very curious, they always like to explore, and IT gave me opportunity to explore. And for very, very long time, I actually felt that I had the information not a lot of people had. Like I actually witnessed how YouTube was growing. You know, I actually, developed one of the first social networking websites back in Australia.
Okay, and really? Interesting.
Yeah.
Even the Facebook was like 2003. It started 2003, right?
No, it was 2004 and I started 2005.
Okay, so what was we will get back to that. I think that's a good to know. Let me do social network. I want to find out about this one. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, so, and because the industry was growing so fast, it allowed me to make money in the industry. So if, let's say my passion was within this industry, but the industry was not big, not sure if I would be able to make money in that. You know, some industry, some people are interested in something. It's their passion, but unfortunately, that industry is way too small or it doesn't allow them to make their money. That's why they moved from that. But in my case, it was
huge. It was exploration. Whatever you want.
Exactly.
Interesting. Okay, so you studied IT there, and I guess you finished. And that's what you mentioned. I would like to deep dive, if you don't mind. You said you built one of the social networks in Australia, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Can you tell us more about it? What was it about and how did it go?
So, at the time when I was graduating, I already started a small website called Trading Post. So it was a trading platform. And it was in 2004. And then I thought, okay, that's my first website. I need to do something else because I'm graduating and I need to keep in contact with my classmates, my university mates. How do I do that? My options were MySpace, okay? The other one was Classmates, which I didn't like it. MySpace was all about music.
That's true. And every website in their own design was like not consistent, right? If you remember.
Exactly. And then the Bebo, there's a UK Bebo.
It's a High Five, if you remember.
High Five, exactly, yeah. But they all were not something that I wanted to use. I just wanted something very simple just to connect with my friends so that it reminds me of their birthdays and etc. And all of a sudden, I got exposed to Facebook because of one person who showed, he said, hey, you're interested in that, check out this Facebook. It's growing very, very quickly.
In US, right? Ivy League.
Yeah, in US. I got access to that Facebook. I was, early adopters of Facebook.
Okay.
Even my registration says 2005. And then I said, wow, that's cool. I need to do the same thing for Australia. My vision was correct. You know, I'm basically, I don't have to reinvent the wheel. I just
follow it.
Bring it to to the country where I was living. But the strategy of bringing to Australia was wrong because it was an English-speaking country. Okay, I didn't realize that Facebook could actually come into the English-speaking country. I had this gut feeling that it might happen, but I was like, oh no, probably not going to happen. Okay, actually, one day I thought, you know what? We're building this beautiful technology, exactly like Facebook. We called ourselves Facebook clone. And then I said to myself, we need to bring it to Russia, you know? And my Russian developer was like, oh no, Russia is not going to use that. You know, it's not going to become a popular. It was before VK.
Oh, okay. Did they have Odnoklassniki at that time in Russia?
Yes. Odnoklassniki was just becoming popular. Mm-hmm. But at the classic, it was Classmates.
Yeah,
so
of course.
It was full of Classmates. And then we thought, let's try it in Australia because Australia is more advanced than Russia and etc. And by the time we realized that we were doing it wrong, like we're pushing into the country where we're going to lose anyway, VK came out. So when I decided to go to Russia and basically bring my technology and push it in Russia, you know, within like 3 weeks before me, VK is coming out. I'm texting to him.
Pavel, do it.
Yeah, Pavel, hey, what's up? How you doing? I saw you just launched it. And he said, oh yeah, I know you because you're doing it in Australia. Because, you know, I was
small,
third person who was cloning Facebook.
Facebook.
So everybody knew each other.
Yeah, it's small.
And then I told him, look, man, I have a lot of experience. I've been doing it for over a year now. We got a partner. And he said, hey, you know, I'm really interested. Let's do that. So we agreed that I would be investing I'd be buying 20% of his equity for $100,000.
Okay. $100K.
Yeah, $100K. Yeah.
Just $100K.
Just 100K, yeah. And, it's well documented. It's in his book. I mean, if you read the book of Code Durova,
You know, is it Russian? Like, yeah, probably Russian. Is it in Russian or English?
I think it's Russian, yeah.
Okay.
So and then he said, so we basically agreed on 20%, and I started teaching him. I started telling him that he needs to do the video, the music, the one that I already did it in Australia.
Sure.
We were like sharing the information all the time. And I was already feeling that I'm part of the VK. And then when the time came that I had to fly to Russia and just, you know, seal the deal, mm-hmm. I spoke to my investors, and they were not from technology industry. And
just before I want to ask one quick question here. So you said you were one of the like pioneers doing the thing, like, you know how the Facebook grew, right? They were going to the public. They were going to the universities, dorms, right?
I was doing the same.
Wow.
I did the exactly same thing. I was going to, I was bringing the Australian universities into my network.
And you were succeeding to some extent. Only the difference was probably because of the size or because of the location, isn't it?
It was a location and the English language, because the Facebook was growing quicker than myself. Australian market is small, and it was growing slower. And then when Facebook opened Australian network, that's it. I was doomed.
I see.
So,
Go ahead. So back to the story now.
Yeah. So we, when I had some advices from people who were senior people, but they were not from technology industry. Mm-hmm. And they said, dude, this is a young guy. Why don't you just take 51%, you know, 51%. He's a kid, you know, who cares? He will accept that. So, and to me, the advices were like, oh, they're senior people. They know what they're talking about. So I came
51%, like still giving 100K
still giving 100K.
Oh, yeah. That's tough.
It's a repo. I mean, it's a repo.
Yes.
Right now, we think like, oh, that was a stupid thing to do. And it was a stupid thing to do. But back then, I was 22.
Okay, I understand.
Yeah.
Wow, 22. I see. I mean, 22, I don't even know where I was. So I see. So you were raised 100K. You're going to Russia for...
Yeah, I came to Russia and I basically changed the deal on the go with Pavel. And he was...
Not a good deal. Not a good deal.
He was not happy.
I understand
and
that.
And then when he was not happy, I said, I had my ego. You know, I said, look, if you don't agree, I have the technology. I was feeling that I was above him because I was more knowledgeable than him. And I said, I will do it myself. I'll just bring my technology and I'll translate it into Russian language. And that's it. You're doomed. And he said, look, man, it's not a good idea. You know, we agreed. We had the agreement. I said, look, you know, we changed the agreement.
I see.
And then it was a wrong thing to do. So once we didn't have an agreement, he started his competition. He did the bring your friends and win the iPods. And it, by the time I started translating my technology, started learning about the Russian market, where do I advertise and blah, blah, blah. I lost like a couple of months and he blew up. He's like, his numbers were blowing up. And I was losing out the game. And then I talked to him and I said, look, I'd be happy to invest for $100,000, 20%. He said, no way, the train just left.
Passed, yeah.
Lost opportunity.
I mean, he comes also from, he's a very, I admit a little bit about his history. Like he's and his brother was like really good programmers, developers. Right? Yeah, developers, programmers. Yeah, in math as well. Yeah, I mean, yeah, interview is not about him, but I think what happened in the event, you know, in the end with him is also very interesting, right? In the end, he was kind of squeezed out from Russia, right? In the end?
Yeah. At the end of the day, well, he...
Childhood Questions are sponsored by Ali Huda. Ali Huda is a video on demand streaming platform for Muslim children where they can watch cartoons and shows while learning about Islam the fun way. If you are a Muslim parent, this will be one of your best investments. Visit www.alihuda.com for a 7-day free trial. Now back to the show.
He didn't get what he wanted as well because we were very close, talking to each other very openly. Yeah, he was promised a lot more equity and he got a lot less. So within his company, he wasn't the majority shareholder. He was
It's crazy.
And then he basically got squeezed out later on, but he still made shit tons of money. I mean, the 20% that I would receive probably would cost me, would be like $600-700 million if the seal was, if we did the deal. And I'd probably be the richest, youngest, and one of the most famous tech guys of Uzbek origin, you know.
You're still on your way.
We're still on the way, but yeah.
That's okay.
It could have been much like 10x.
It's okay. You know, sometimes things in life, you don't know where it takes you, right? So this deal didn't happen. Then what's going on in your life? Just walk us through. The lesson here is that, what is the number one lesson you took from this experience? Like, making the deal and it didn't work out, changing the deal at the last minute. What was the lesson?
One of the most important lessons that I learned is that you have to listen to yourself. Like, you cannot rely on other people's opinion, because they don't know that. You know, you can listen, but you need to do the judgment yourself. And sometimes you need to go with your gut feelings. My gut feelings were telling me that I was doing it wrong. Okay. But me being young and not confident in myself, I made a mistake. Also, you're granted something, take it. You know, don't put five fingers into your mouth, because it's not going to work out, you know. 20% was shitloads of equity, okay? I could have taken that. But because of the greediness, because of not being confident in myself, I went and asked for more.
It takes
right
a lot
now,
of
mistakes.
It takes a lot of guts to acknowledge our mistakes. You know, I'm interesting in perspective. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank
I think that's a lesson. That's a lesson for all of us, I guess. So the deal didn't go through, and the one of the things about entrepreneurs said that they don't stop, right? If the deal doesn't go, you don't stop. So you keep bouncing. So what's going on in your life during that time? What was the next thing you went on?
It's all right. So what happened is that I got depressed I didn't know that I was depressed back then. But looking back, I know I was heavily depressed. I went to Uzbekistan. So I flew from Russia to Uzbekistan to my parents' house.
So what time frame are we talking? 2005, 2006?
2007, I think. 2007.
Okay. Wow.
So,
okay.
And then I went back to Uzbekistan. I wasn't paying my rent in Australia. I basically left it go, everything that I built in Australia. It just collapsed, my office, my employees. I had bills coming in. And I was like, I was feeling loser. And I went home and I spent 6 months with my parents doing nothing. And then one day I realized that I was running away from my bills, because I was running away from feeling that, being a loser. If I was going to return to Australia, first, I had to face the bills. I had to face that I lost it. I had to look at my employees' eyes, which was super difficult to do. Instead, I decided, no, I'm going to stay here. I don't see anybody. I don't talk to anybody. And that's it. I don't even go to VK, by the way. Still, up until now, I haven't logged into VK, but I was one of the first ones to register there.
Wow.
And I still have the communication with the Pavel on my VK messages. So, but then my parents told me, hey, you're wasting your life. You're still young. What are you going to do?
You are 22, 23 at this time, right?
Yeah.
The life is just even started. Yeah, you said that.
Yeah, but I had the huge ambitions. And I was seeing VK growing and Pavel Duru becoming a hero. And here I am, a loser. So I was feeling very bad. And then my parents told me, hey, life is moving on. You got to face it. You still have a lot to live. And then I realized that if I don't go back to Australia, then probably I don't have any opportunity to, I have to face the problems. So
face the reality, huh?
Face the reality. So I went to Australia facing a huge debt. I had loans. I had office problems, and what I did, I got employed, and my former employees got employed. They were getting a good salary by now, And they were looking at me like, hey, Babir, you weren't paying us, so we had to get employment. And I was like, sorry, guys. But when I applied to corporate job, I showed my articles, I showed what I have done, and I had like number of offers. And I basically, they were paying me enormous amount of money back then. And so I worked for a corporate, I did corporate job.
You were like a consultant, IT consultant?
No, technology. It was something like AT&T, but technology division, working on a multi-billion dollar project. And I was one of the IT business analysts. I was the youngest member of the team. And I started paying off my debt, Within the 1 year, I paid off pretty much everything. And it was a huge relief. And I felt like I won something, you know, I got this immunity. I got, I went through that. And then all of a sudden my life changed. It was like, wow, you know, so if you have a problem and if you run away, you're still in the problem. But if you have a problem and you tackle it and you solve it, it's like, wow, it's an achievement, you know, it's an achievement of its own. So I wasn't feeling like I lost anymore. I lost it, but I got up and I paid off my loans. So that helped me a lot. And then because I'm an entrepreneur, I feel like being entrepreneur all the time. I left the job and I started small micro projects. I'm not going to mention them because they didn't work out anyway.
That's okay, because that's the part of the path, right? It doesn't, every idea doesn't work. You do a lot of small things, it doesn't work, but eventually it will lead you to something. You're learning always.
So then at one point I went to Uzbekistan because my goal was, okay, I was feeling in Australia, I was feeling too small. The market was small. We were under the shadow of the US. Like whatever we did, like it was happening in US, or I could take it to Russia. But then I decided, okay, I'll go to Uzbekistan, live there for some time, and probably move to Russia. So I went to Uzbekistan, and I didn't tell you, but back in 98, I started a small web hosting company when I got access to the internet. Mm-hmm. I started reselling the web hosting to Uzbekistani local market. There were very few people who wanted websites, but they needed the web hosting, and I was doing it. It was my school project. And mm-hmm. when I left Australia, I left it to my father just to keep it up, you know, manage.
Yeah, yeah.
Like not even manage it, just pay off some of the salaries. And it, organically, it was growing. In 2010, I took over this company, and then I actually sold it. It was one of the first exits of Uzbekistan, we didn't talk about it.
Sure.
Because the regime was different. They didn't like it. But I was acquired by a $1 billion company, Softline. Very big company. And it acquired a small, tiny project in Uzbekistan. It gave me cash. All of a sudden, I'm a happy guy now. And I'm moving to Russia because TechCrunch was happening. TechCrunch was opening its doors in Russia. And I said, I need to go to TechCrunch. And then I went there and I met a couple of more Uzbeks who were in technology industry. And I was like shocked. I thought I was the only person in technology industry doing something in the entire Uzbekistan. I mean, outside of Uzbekistan. And I saw guys, very young, talented guys, who were just starting a Groupon-like project. The name of the project was Kupi Coupon.
Yeah, you met my friends.
Really? Okay. Yeah. So they raised capital. Okay, Komil, Jasur, Beg.
Yes, yes. Shavkat. Komil and Shavkat, we used to study together at World Economy and Diplomacy. They were roommates. Shavkat was a roommate. Komil is a good friend. Very close friends until then.
Yeah. So I met these guys who just started this project 4 or 5 months ago. And I thought, wow, this is a good opportunity to be a partners with them. So I came up with a project called Kupi Otpusk. And we started the Kupi Otpusk, and then it basically blended into Kupi Coupon.
It was with Beg Zod, right? I guess you were doing
that. Yeah. And it basically got blended in within the Kupi Coupon company. I still have an equity there in this company, a tiny equity, but I do still have an equity. And then because there were a lot of, partners within this project, I felt like, oh, you know, there's too many people. I need to. You know, there are too many people, too many decision makers and etc. And plus, they were friends, and I was outsider.
That's true. That's true.
I didn't feel I was fitting in into the group. So I decided to come out from that project and do something like Airbnb, but for the Russian market.
I see.
Raised the capital. Also, I had my own capital. We raised $3 million.
Wow. What year is it? Like 2010?
2011.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Very quick. It was like 2012. Sorry. 2011 or 12. Yeah. So I raised this capital. We started this project. We launched it. I had beautiful office, nice stuff. You know, the business was growing. But one thing I didn't take into the consideration is that you cannot just bring the business from abroad and expect it to grow in Russia, because the mentality
context, Russia.
Yeah, the mentality, the economical differences, and etc.
I see.
The problem we were facing is not with the business model. The model was good, that people were not going to pay they didn't want to pay their taxes. What we were doing is that we had listed a lot of apartments listed, Russian apartments. We were bringing customers from abroad who wanted to get this apartment, and they were paying with American Express or whatever, you know, Visa, MasterCard. But the landlords were expecting us to pay them cash, because if we transfer them to their account, then they have to pay taxes, which they completely avoided.
It's all Soviet Union countries, I guess. They want to avoid tax.
And it stuck me because there were few companies who were saying, okay, we will accept cards, but then most of them, 80%, were not. And then we were saying, hey, we cannot work like that. And they were saying, pay me cash or don't send me any clients.
Because you're going against the culture. It's going to be a tough one.
Yeah, and then they say, pay me cash. But how am I supposed to pay you cash? Because I'm accepting the, I'm a cashless company. And then we don't care. So it brought a lot of tension and not understanding how to proceed. Okay. And then we were doing some illegal things. We were taking out our money from our account and then paying them cash, which is illegal in Russia.
Okay. I see.
It's called обналичивание, which is really bad thing. And then we decided not to do that because...
Yeah, in the long run, it's not good.
I would probably end up in jail for a very long time. So I had to basically kill the company that was working well. And we had some tensions with the investors as well. And then we basically killed it.
Here's a lesson. Another lesson for us is that when you there are some technical challenges you face sometimes as a founder. And sometimes you face cultural issues. I think when technical, it's easy fix. Culture is like something really crazy, right? You cannot change the culture just one click, right?
Exactly.
That's the problem.
It was purely cultural, not the technical. Now they are okay with that, you know.
Now Airbnb is doing that, right?
Yeah.
So it was, you guys were early in the market.
Way too early. Bringing the technology at the time when the Russia was cash-based economy. And people didn't want to pay taxes. So we had no choice. I wasn't able to sustain my business and risk my life with being jailed sometimes.
I understand.
I had to close the business. And it was like a second failure, like a big failure. But I took it okay.
I've been here before.
I know that. I'm going to be okay. It's not that I'm dead. You know, I still breathe. I'm still alive. I'll be okay. I was not happy, obviously. I was in a bad mood, but I was not depressed. And what happened is that because already I had a certain reputation within the industry, Russian tech community, you know, a lot of people knew me, VCs knew me, and etc. People started reaching out to me. They said, hey, Bobir, don't worry, everything is cool. You know, we know what happened to you. It's just it didn't work out, but that's okay. And people start supporting me. And very wealthy people reached out to me from abroad, very, very wealthy from Forbes, billionaires. And they said, we want your help. You know, we know that you're having this issue. We want your help. Come and consult us. And I never thought of consulting anyone. I never thought, because I was building my own product.
Your own thing, that's true.
All of a sudden, here you are getting bankrupt one more time, and you are us being consulted.
So here's the question. How did they know you? Like, did they know what you did, or did you only personally? I want to understand that.
Look, I was in the media in Russia all the time.
Oh, okay.
I was pretty well known in my industry, and I was networking with a very, very, very famous people in tech industry. So,
I see.
You know, people know each other within this industry.
Sure.
So, and they reached out to me and they said, look, we need your consultation. And I'm like, oh man, I never thought I could consult anybody. I just lost my second business and you still want me to consult?
You are gaining experience, which you don't know, which you have, right? Exactly. But people value that.
Apparently people value that. And I didn't know that. I was feeling a little bit not confident about myself.
Imposter syndrome. Am I good enough? Who am I to consult people?
How am I going to consult, especially these people, like they're ultra wealthy people. And I came and then they said their problem. They had this technology business, a small technology company, building a product, and they hired a lot of people and they couldn't manage it. And I realized, wow, they cannot, they're these people, smart, wealthy people, they cannot manage the team. I managed them easily.
Okay. So remember, so this is after the second project failed. Are you still in Russia at this time? And you're...
Yeah, I'm still in Russia.
But still consulting international people.
International people.
So that's interesting.
So I fly to UK every 2 weeks.
Interesting.
And then they said, we want you to lead this group. And I said, okay, in that case, I'm going to bring my own team. And they said, bring your own team. So I took my team from my previous project.
In Russia,
Uzbekistan. And I said, guys, we're transitioning to consultancy industry. And like, oh, we're building a product. We're like into product. I said, guys, either you're going to be fired or you guys going to be with me. Like, I have no other choice. And then they said, okay, let's do that. So we took over a project in UK and we built the system, everything. For me, it was easy. You know, it was like, I can do that.
You're not under pressure anymore because you're getting paid. You don't have to worry about the customers and marketing.
Exactly. And I was getting paid a lot of money. I was flying to UK all the time, every 2 weeks, 3 weeks. I was networking with the very, very wealthy individuals. And I started getting referrals. I didn't have a website. I didn't have, you know, a branding. It was just me, a beer, and that's it. And they were referring. Here's this guy, knows technology. Go to him. And I would start consulting other people. How do you develop it? And a lot of people were valuing my consultation because I went through two failures. I built a lot of different products, and they valued that. So they were paying me very well. I was living in Russia, getting paid in the British pounds, in US dollars, and I was living in Russia. So I was having a very, very good time. And then in 2000, very interesting thing is that in 2004, when the Russian ruble devalued against US dollar, people were, wow, all of a sudden, from 30 rubles to $1, it became 70 rubles, okay, to $1.
So it was 2014, right? There was 14. I remember that, yeah.
14.
That was big.
All of a sudden, everybody left and right were complaining, all of my friends who were making money in Russia. And I just realized, shit, I just doubled my
revenue
income in Russia. My food is 2 times cheaper. My employees are 2 times cheaper. Everything is cheaper now. So I was like pretending to be in a very bad position actually, just to support my friends because, you know,
yeah, you don't be in that position.
Really stupid. But I was living a very good life. So fast forward, I made money. You know, I was doing good money with consultancy business. I was flying all over the world. And you know, I had this Russian, Australian residency, so I didn't need the visa or anything like that. It was very easy for me to travel. And so what happened is that people start reaching out to me to invest. And I invested in Plov.com.
Plov.com. Interesting. Okay.
Plov.com.
Tell me more about it.
Plov.com is super exciting project. They are basically Uzbek food, but you know, in the modern, they present it in the modern style. So the slogan was "Viva la Plov, Plov must go on." You know, God bless the Plov, and etc., etc. So because of the creativity, these guys were featured everywhere at the Russian TVs. No money spent, but they were super growing. And these guys reached out to me and they said, "We know you, who you are."
So they said Uzbek. They must be Uzbeks, right? Yeah, they're promoting
in Russia.
Who else would promote the Plov?
Yeah, yeah. And then if you go to the website, it's really cool. Like even the, the images is really good.
Okay.
I invested. That was my first experience investing into a project. I invested some money. I got the equity.
It's in Russia. This project is in Russia, right?
Yeah. It became number one project by Forbes in 2016. And it's still going well.
Is it only in Russia so far?
It's only in Russia, but we have a lot of inquiries for franchising, but we didn't go outside of Russia. We have we have places, distribution places, a lot of distribution places across Moscow. So, and then the second project, the project that I invested was co-working center in Uzbekistan. So
co-working, co-working place?
Yeah, it's called TCK.
It's like WeWork, right?
It's called TCK, and there was super... It was super cool project, but it was ahead of its time.
I see.
And they, you know, it was at the time of the old regime. They were cracking down when there was a lot of people gathering. Mm. I invested, and we had to shut it down. But it was the first co-working center, and based on and the Ground Zero, the other co-working center that opened. They opened because of us. So I know him very well. He was consulting with us,
you know,
what kind of mistakes not to do, and etc. So I kind of started investing in other small projects as well. And in 2016, hey, you can stop me if you have questions because I can talk.
No, it's just, don't worry about it. I'm just enjoying it. We just came so far. 2016, you want me to stop right now? It doesn't make sense. Let's cover the last 3 years.
All right, 2016. I felt like I was not growing. I was traveling.
You were doing consulting, you were doing small investments, and now you need something big.
Yeah, I was feeling like, hey, I have these investments, I have this money. I'm feeling in my, I'm sitting in the comfort zone in Russia. I'm making good money, but this is not what I wanted. I'm an English speaking guy. I think in English. I want to grow in a very competitive market. And all of my friends were saying, dude, do not make this mistake. Sit here because you're doing very well. And I said, no, this is
You don't want to be the comfort zone. You still have this nostalgia, right? It didn't work out. You want to do something product or service, just goes really big.
I'm looking at Pavel Duro, the guy who's the same age. He's doing very well. And I'm doing like a consultant.
You always, I see. I understand.
I'm a very competitive guy. It helps me in a way, but it also distracts me sometimes. So I'm like competitive guy, and I'm saying like I need to change my location. I've spent 6 years in Russia, but I need to change. So we decided to move to US. I had no idea how I'm going to settle down. So what I've done is I got the student visa for my wife, and then she came here to Russia, and I was basically sponsoring her. And while I was in US. I was thinking, what am I going to do? Like, how am I going to settle down here?
Just a second. It's like 2017-18, you came to US, is what you're saying?
16,
okay.
Yeah, 16. Okay. I came to US, but in between them, I was coming to US like every month, just as a tourist business guy and et cetera. And by the way, in 15, I did 95 trips in 1 year. So all over across the world. So every 3 days I was flying. So at 16, I'm moving to US. My wife was in a student visa, and I was at the dependent visa. Mm. And then I was basically networking with people.
You were in New York? Where were you?
I was in New York. Yeah.
Okay. New York. This is where things happen.
Yeah. And then I was networking with people. And I spoke to a few immigration lawyers, and one of them, very smart lady, young lady, she consults, she said, look, Bobir, you know, your story is extraordinary.
They have a visa like that, yeah.
You get an extraordinary visa. And I said,
that's true.
No way. Like, I'm not an extraordinary guy, you know? Mm. And she said, trust me, just prepare all of your documents, you know, I'll help you out. And she's a very smart lawyer. And we prepared all of the documents, everything that I've done. You know, I was at the cover magazine of Australia and et cetera back in 2005, 2006.
Now so they're paying off, right? All those things.
So I've collected everything, even my biggest failures, my interviews, and we applied. And within 7 days, I was granted.
7 days. Wow.
7 days. Yeah, I was granted a visa called Individual with Extraordinary Ability in Business. And then my lawyer was impressed. She said, like, it's very quick, very quick. So, and then officially I was acknowledged to be an extraordinary, which was a good feeling. And then I started my consultancy. I started pushing my consultancy. And then at that time, blockchain was coming out. So very interesting story. Blockchain is coming out. And then my employee, his name is Ronan, he said, hey, why don't we explore this avenue? I said, I don't even understand what the hell is that.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't understand what it is. So what we've done, and I'm a very good lead generator. Mm-hmm. I have this knowledge how to do that. I said to my employee, go and get all of the press releases that are related for blockchain, and then write them an email saying that we are a blockchain consultancy company. So this is what we did. We parsed a lot of press releases and we blasted a lot of emails. It's not a spam when you're sending it to corporates. It's not a spam. And after sending those emails, within 20 minutes, he called me and he said, Babir, something weird is happening. A lot of people are replying to us. And I said, what are they saying? They said, they want to talk to us. What am I supposed to do? I said, talk to blockchain consultancy company? Really? And he goes, yeah, dude, we got to talk to them. And we have this UNESCO, we have UNDP, we have this big corporation wanted to talk to us.
Psst. If you are an entrepreneur with a product or service for the Muslim market, let's get in touch. We are halal.ad, a marketing agency and ad network for the ever-growing Muslim market. We can help you reach millions of Muslims to grow your business. Visit www.halal.ad for a 30-minute free consultation. Now back to the show.
I said, all right, let's talk to them. So I picked up my phone. He connected me to first potential client. He said, hey, you guys are blockchain consultancy. You have, you know Ethereum, you know Solidity. And I'm like, oh, yeah, we know that. I didn't know that. Yeah, we know that, but my developer is super busy now. We can't, you know, connect you. Oh, really? You guys are one of the few ones out there who are doing the consultancy. So please reach out to me when you're free. I said, okay. And the next one, the same thing. They were talking about the
contract. So you're validating the market before even getting into it, right?
Yeah, I had no idea what they were talking about, zero knowledge what they
and
were
there's
talking
a demand.
About.
Someone is calling you, someone really wants that.
Basically, I was collecting the leads very, very quickly. The leads were coming in. We literally had like hundreds of potential leads. And then, so what we did, we made a list of keywords. Okay, Solidity developer, what is that? We need to learn, you know, smart contracts and etc. So we made a list and then we learned that. It took us like 30 to 45 days to actually learn what people were talking. And we've been promising everybody to provide them service. And we made an impression to other people that we're a super busy company, loaded with a lot of people. And I was saying, hey, my developer is busy. He's going to finish within 3 weeks, 4 weeks. And just like doing that kind of thing. And then we said, what are we going to do? Like, we have so many leads. We need to provide them service. And we reached out to a company, one of the companies in Canada. They were like a small company, you know, growing up very quickly. And we said, we're going to give you leads. You know, let's do the call, you know.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Share it. And we just established a brand, blockcrunch.com, and we start giving them leads. And all of a sudden, you know, business start generating money, pretty good money. And then within four and a half months, we had our first offer of being acquired. And the guy called from Los Angeles and he said, and by this time, we're already in the industry.
So what you're doing is actually you're genuinely giving the thing to another company who does, and there's someone who wants to acquire. It's amazing.
Yeah. So we were literally within this industry now, and we're attending the events. Everything is happening very quickly, hyper growth. And then we had an offer, and then, you know, it was a good offer. Then we spoke to our colleague in Canada, and he said, the guy who we were sending the clients to, and he said he wants to buy us out as well. And
okay.
We made a deal and with two investors, and we sold ourselves, one with the equity. You know, they gave us their equity that we can sell in the stock in a stock exchange, and the other one paid us in cash. So within 5 months, we had an exit. That's it.
That was a very short one, but a good one.
Exactly.
Yeah, when the market is growing, you just join the band.
Yeah, the valuation was a $10 million valuation.
Wow, so not bad. I mean, for the 5 month companies. I mean, I think I remember that period that everything was just going fast. I don't know. I don't follow that market any longer, but I know where they're going. But I remember the moment it was going really, really crazy.
Really crazy. It was insanely crazy.
I know.
People were becoming a millionaires overnight.
I remember. I remember.
And we were at the epicenter. We were there, right there. But it was the right strategy, because if we were scared of actually offering something we didn't have, we would not make it.
Yeah.
We were very confident. We were very confident. And yeah, that's what happened. After some time, the market crashed. Everything was going down. But our story was already published on Bloomberg and, you know, other places. I was reached out by Bloomberg and they said they want to make a documentary about me. Unfortunately, it didn't work out because I went to Uzbekistan and got employed by the government of Uzbekistan. And
oh, that's going to be interesting. So it's coming up now?
Yeah.
Okay. So I didn't know you were coming back. That's going to be interesting. So yeah, I'm just enjoying so far. I'm just going back and I'm like all sideways. What's going on?
So I got, you know, people start reaching out from the embassy.
So just to give a background information, I think, to people understand, I think we both know what's going on, but people may not understand because listeners. So what happened is that I think 2016, we're talking about, right? The previous president passed away and the new president, Chaka Mirzoyev, comes. And like, I'm not into much politics, to be honest, but what I can feel that I can see the positive vibe going on. So I think probably someone reached out because they were calling people, right? They were calling people, they're inviting. I remember, I even know a couple of people even from, because Denmark went there. So probably you are one of those people, they were reach out to you, right?
Yeah, I was third. Okay. Third person in Uzbekistan to actually got employed by the government of Uzbekistan.
So okay.
What happened is that the new regime said, we want smart people from overseas to come back and work for us. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't planning to work for anybody. I was planning to move on with my business, and I had just this success right now. I'm planning to be shot. I have a documentary with Bloomberg. But anyway, the embassy called me and they said,
it's 2016, 17 or 18?
Well, it was already 17.
Okay.
And then, it was 18. Sorry. It was 18.
It must be, yeah.
Yeah, 18. And then, I went to Uzbekistan because I had this idea, okay, let's do one project in Uzbekistan.
But something gets you back, right? Something like what's called?
Well, you know, when people are calling you and they want to talk to you, especially at the high level, you feel, you know, you feel good about that. So I decided to go and talk with them.
Yeah, I mean, you were talking to a lot of high people all the time. It's not the thing. I think there's something also about being Uzbek. You know, you want to help your country in some way. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
I really want to know how it ended up. So go tell me.
At that time, I was meeting with the Bahamian prime minister, the head of the state. You know, they invited us for an event. So I was already talking to big guys. And here you are, Uzbekistan is opening and they wanted some help. And I felt like, okay, you know, I can go and maybe help them. So I went there with no intention of being employed by the government. I just went there because of, you know, some of the projects. But I start meeting with the president's administration with few ministers and etc., etc. I ended up being introduced to an agency which was under the president of Uzbekistan, which was involved, who was directly reporting to the president of Uzbekistan. And they were, you know, responsible for tech industry, for the blockchain industry. So, and when they were writing a law, I actually gave a lot of inputs. So a lot of, you know, things were given from my side. So I brought my guy from US as well. And I proposed them to do one business project. It's called GCP, like government PPP, public-private partnership project, where government is going to be involved and private sector is going to be involved, myself. And they said, oh yeah, that's going to be cool. Write a letter to the president, you know, offering him what you want. And I actually did. And apparently he said, cool, this is a good idea. Let him do that. And then I'm going to Europe to talk to some of my investors, partners. And then I'm coming back to Uzbekistan. All of a sudden, they're showing me a decree saying, hey, where have you been? You've been nominated. You're now going to be employed by the government. I said, well, what are you talking about? I'm not going to be working for the government. I have a trip to Miami with my family in 2 weeks. What are you talking about? No, you got to work. Look, he approved your project. He wants you to do this project, but he also wants you to work for us.
Okay.
So they basically gave me 5 minutes to think. And within the split of a second, I said, why not? Okay, let me try.
Oh, okay. Interesting. I was going to say, you say, no way. I'm always free. I just want to do my thing. But that's interesting. Go ahead.
I was talking to some of the decision makers of Uzbekistan.
Oh, okay.
It was kind of, they were pressing me. And I said, okay, we'll do that. And
I remember this trend that happened like when you were 22, right? Like something.
Yeah. And I called my wife and she was like, oh, what are you doing? Why you're a freedom loving person. You're an entrepreneur. You're going to be a bureaucrat. You don't have to do that. I said, look, I already said yes. I can't say no anymore. Mm-hmm. So I got employed. I was the deputy of a digital trust fund, which was, which is a pretty big organization. And I was meeting with all of the senior people coming from abroad. You know, I was flying to Korea to meet these big people from Hyundai, Daewoo. All of a sudden, I'm into $1 billion projects, you know, government projects now, not a private projects. And so I felt good because the way, you know, at this level, when you're at this level, you kind of feel there are a lot of government privileges and they're, you know, the perks are really cool, really good. You know, some of the perks are probably you will only get it if you're a billionaire. Okay. So that was cool. That was a cool part. The bad part is that I'm an entrepreneur. And when investors were coming to me and I had the official delegations, there were, you know, people talking to me. They were saying, we want to invest in this and that and that. And I was representing Uzbekistan. I was thinking about, dude, this is a good business opportunity. I have to be on the other side, you know. I shouldn't be on the government side. I have to be on the other side. And all of a sudden, all of the time, I had this conflict of interest. I wanted to be on the business side. And so I realized that I cannot be a government official. You know, it's way too too much of bureaucracy. You know, way too small, way too slow. Even though I built my team of very smart people, my team was people from coming from, you know, abroad. I brought a lot of people. And I told them, even though we are a government of, organization, when the investor is coming, we need to sell them. We need to be not a bureaucrat who's stopping the investor, but we need to sell them. We need to serve them. So I was treating my organization as a business organization which wanted to attract the investors. So, which World Bank loved, which other organizations loved, but I personally wasn't happy. So I decided to quit.
I understand. Like, so here's a question, I think, for us, and especially if anybody from government listening, like, what would be the best work scenario between a person like you, like entrepreneurs like us, and the government? What is the best way, do you think, they can kind of get benefit of entrepreneurs still giving them that freedom? What would it be?
So, first of all, even though they were offering me, by their standards, good salary, which was $2,000, that wasn't anything attractive to me. So
it doesn't make sense, right?
It doesn't make sense. Okay, my expenses were way much higher. So I was subsidizing.
So you were not doing for the money. You were not doing for the money. Let's put it this way.
Yeah, I was doing money. Okay. So on the other side, I don't think like a true entrepreneur is going to be happy in the government, because the entrepreneur mindset is always to create something, businesses. You have to be ultra wealthy guy to not think about the money anymore and just be very patriotically, just work for the sake of the government. But I think you can do that when you're at a certain age.
Not probably, yes. Probably.
Right now, we're still very ambitious. We're way too ambitious. So you have to be at a certain level, have a certain security, and then you can do that.
You know what I was thinking, Babu?
And that also, you need to have a motivation. Even
yes.
For me, I wanted motivation because I was bringing, you know, big projects into the government. They could be $100 million projects and etc. But then you're not getting anything.
No, you know? It doesn't make sense. So that's exactly where I was going back to. So what I was saying is that what if the government started offering, guys, look, we have a project, right? The project is owned by like X percent by us, Y percent by you. You do the job, we allow you, we open the doors for you. And when you get something as well. That would be, what do you think?
That would be super cool. I actually raised that, but law does not allow you.
I know.
Not only that, you cannot even have a business but when you're in the public sector.
That's crazy.
I mean, I wasn't allowed to do business. They were telling me, you know, they said, hey, look, you can do that. You can do this, but it's illegal and you can end up being.
No, I understand.
So when you are in that position, you constantly get, you know, you're offered bribes. Okay. And if you do that one time, you're not going to get out of the system.
I know. So
once you are bribed,
you're on the hook. You're on the hook.
You're in the hook. That's it. You're in the hook.
So, I know. I feel you. So which brings us to where? So now you're back in US.
Okay. So I said, sorry, guys. Your guys are cool. My project is not moving on. You know, I couldn't even do it legally. You know, the project that I wanted to do, they said, yeah, you could do that. But legally, I wasn't able to do that.
I see.
I could do that, but it would be illegal.
I see.
I decided not to proceed with the project, not to do anything with Uzbekistan. I said, look, let me go. And after some talk, I left. I went back. I came back to US. Finally, my family was super happy. And I felt like, ooh, where's my driver? Where's my person who you know, talks everything that I say? Like, I had the full team just serving me. You know, I was a senior guy. And
I am in Uzbekistan. Oh, I see. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I had this guy who arranges my meetings, the guy who gives me all of the news, you know, everything, like a senior guy's administration. So, and I'm back to New York with my kids, with my new driver, you know, with all this stuff. And I feel like lonely all of a sudden. And then some of my friends who are in the government, they said this is a normal thing, you know. It's you feel that you will have to transition to normal.
Dear listener, based on many requests from our listeners, we are launching a Muslims on Fire Academy. It's for those who want to do more than just listening. It's for those who not only want to be inspired, but to be one of the Muslims on fire as well. It's for those who want to discover their purpose in life, follow their dreams, and live in prosperity. If this is you, join us for a journey of a lifetime. The introduction course is free. Learn more at academy.muslimsonfire.com. Learn more at academy.muslimsonfire.com.
Interesting experience.
And look, when I went to Israel, I went to Belarus, I was provided the border guards, I was provided the security.
When I was in
Israel, I was provided the helicopter to transfer me. So I'm talking about this level.
I see. The privileges, yeah, perks, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of perks. So now I'm back to business, and I'm like, okay, we need to do our business. And I always had my outsourcing, the consultancy business I started in 2013 with a British company. I still had it. So it was serving my clients. It wasn't growing. So I said, okay, now I need to push this company back to consultancy.
So now you're like 2019, 20?
It was 19 March. Okay. So I came to Uzbekistan 18 June, July, and then I left in March.
Okay. Okay.
So less than a year, about 9 months. So I'm back to US and doing my business, consultancy, outsourcing company, employed more people, started advertising, you know, and my business started growing again. But I am a product guy. I always wanted to build a product. And I knew that one day we are going to be working in a world where everything is going to be distributed. Everything is going to be over the video conferencing. And, you know, before pandemic, Zoom was used only by technical people.
That's right.
You know, geeks, you know,
that's
before,
right.
before that. And very corporate senior level people. But I was already managing my team, distributed team since 2005. So I knew how to manage the team. So, and I was closing deals over the video conferencing. In one of my interviews in Uzbekistan, I said, look, I closed $200,000-$300,000 deals without seeing my client over the video conferencing. And it was before pandemic. And people were shocked. They would say, oh, no way. Video conferencing? No way. It can't happen. But now we're like doing the interviews over the video conferencing. So I started to go to the video conferencing and start building the technology. And I have this domain name, Miz.com. I invested a lot of money into that product. And by the time when pandemic, you know, at the time when pandemic came, we were still under the development stage. We rolled out.
So I would understand. So you actually started working with before the pandemic, right? About a year ago,
A year before pandemic. So it was like.
Well, you go in deep. I just want to ask you like one question. Like, I think what's very important. Like, look, you see Zoom, right? You know, talking on Zoom. So the thing is like, I want to understand your pricing model. Like, how are you going to make money on this one? Because we know how Zoom makes money. Because your pricing is a bit different, right? I checked out, it's free. Yeah. I want to understand where you're making money. I mean, I understand, but I want to tell the people as well.
Absolutely. Your way of thinking. Very good question. Look, we wanted to become something like Zoom, but white label. Just go on white label. We decided not to go with that because Zoom just exploded. Right? Okay, mm-hmm. we didn't have enough time. We had to come out like 4 months before that. So what I envision is that, okay, this is what we need to do. People now are going to lose their jobs. People are now going to be doing a lot of freelance work and etc. They need, and some people are going to offer their services online, even the teachers, the lawyers and etc. So what they need is they need a video conferencing, to facilitate that communication, which is Zoom. Mm-hmm. They need a calendar, which is Calendly. Okay, there are a lot of people using Calendly or Google Calendar.
That's true.
And then they need to accept the payment, which is Stripe, which could be anything else. So my vision was, okay, I need to do everything in one place. Anyone can register with Miz.com. They will have a video conferencing payment system, calendar integrated into the system. And then they will have the unique URL, which they can post on their website or on their Instagram. Mm-hmm. And then if they want to say, if they want a client, people just go to their URL, see their pages, what kind of service they offer, book their service, pay their service. And the video conferencing is also going to be facilitated within one ecosystem.
I see,
also, if you don't want the video conferencing, then the system will call you on your phone, both of you on the phone. So it's a work automation tool.
I see.
So this is what we're trying to build. And there is a demand for that. It's just that we have limited resources of development resources.
I understand.
It's kind of difficult because I'm financing everything myself. So this is what we're trying to do.
I see. Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I mean, that will be interesting to look at. And even one of our setups, I was looking at the modeling and then I will chat to you after the talk. We can figure this out. So is that it or we have
no,
more?
No, yeah. Also, you know, being an entrepreneur, you have so many ideas in your mind. So the other thing is that what we're building, we thought, okay, now how people are promoting themselves. They're promoting themselves via Instagram and et cetera, okay? But they don't have their website. And they don't need a lawyer doesn't, or a teacher doesn't need a website. So what we're doing is we're creating an expert hero project. It's called experthero.com. It's not live yet, so you don't have to go there. Mm-hmm. And you will have your own page, and we will vet every expert. Let's say you're a teacher, very good teacher. We'll say, okay, you're a good teacher. You can be an expert hero. You're going to get your own URL. You're going to have your own photo, you know, all of the feedbacks. And it's like, you basically will create an e-commerce page for your personal branding. And then we're going to integrate the booking, Miz.com's booking system. So, and then you can, that's it. You have the website. Also, you know, it will be vetted. You are a vetted expert. Mm-hmm. And you can promote this page anywhere you want. And it will be endorsed by us. We will say, yes, that this person is endorsed by Expert Hero. You know, this person is expert. It could be a gym trainer. It could be a teacher. It could be a lawyer. Anyone else. Anyone.
Interesting.
Who's an expert. So, and we're planning to build the biggest network of experts. Biggest expert, vetted expert. It's not that you come and say, I'm an expert, that's it. You know, I'm the best guy and you're trying to promote yourself. No, we vet you. We'll look, hey, have you been in the industry for a long time? Have you done some things? And then once you're approved, that's it. You're going to be an expert.
I see. And the revenue models, I guess, so whenever they get paid, you get a cut.
Well, it could, they will, we might think about that. The revenue model is, it's going to be free. At the beginning, it's going to be free. Maybe it's going to be subscription-based. Maybe it's going to be cutting the revenue or something like that. We have to decide. But look, what's the ultimate goal? When you have thousands of experts, different experts, having their own unique domain URL, then what? I become a lead generator for them. I just build on top of that a search saying, do you need the best teachers? Okay, choose one of them. So I become a lead generator for them as well.
Interesting. So the your insight came to this because of pandemic, because a lot of people were working from outside. Let's create a build something for them. Is it come? How did it come? I want to understand the inspiration.
So one thing that I learned from my own experience is that I can foresee some of the things. So I have this gut feeling already, and I trust my gut feelings. And I knew that the world that we know right now is going to change. From offline, we're going to transition online.
Yeah.
You know, even the people who are working offline right now, and I was thinking, once the financial crisis comes in, they will lose their job and they will start providing their services. Somehow they need a platform to provide. They can go to Upwork, but it's a junk place, you know, too many people and etc. But let's say you're a very good expert and you need a platform. So here you are. I'm building you a platform.
You can build your website or you can come here. I think the key word in your idea is like, if you can actually deliver that promise, giving the lead to people, and that will be the key changer, right? It doesn't, people don't matter. We're like, I mean,
Here it is. Even if we don't bring them leads, because we're not going to be bring them the leads at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Let's say if you open up e-commerce store, Shopify, okay? Shopify doesn't give you clients. You have to promote it yourself. But now as well, you need a presence. What kind of presence do you have? You have Instagram, which is a lot of photos. You have LinkedIn, which is a good platform. It's a good platform to get leads. But some people need a website. You know, some people do need a website. And what do? You create a website for yourself. You don't have to. Here you are. We are going to give you a website, and it's going to be and you are going to be endorsed by the expert hero. You are going to be, you know, we will say, this is the guy who's expert. And you're going to be proud to share this link, even on your Instagram. Because like me, look, I've been admitted to Forbes Tech Council recently. I'm proud to share the link. You know, I'm proud.
Of course.
The same way, if we're saying, this is the guy who's expert, you will be proud to share it. And that website is going to be accepting clients, you know, booking, payments, video conferencing, everything.
Interesting. Okay. I'm looking forward to see it. So when is it you guys going to launch this one?
We're working day and night on that. Hopefully within 1 or 2 weeks.
Okay, well, that's not that far away. Yeah, in the middle of September. Babur, that's been an amazing interview. I have to be honest, like, it's like almost your whole life. So, but I have some couple of questions. I was asking yesterday, hey, I'm talking to my countryman Babur, and what questions you want to ask? So there's some questions came for you. If you don't mind, I will ask them.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead. If you have any questions, I'm here to answer them.
Sure. Some of them, like, you know, from our people from Uzbekistan as well, especially about what's going on in Uzbekistan, I think you will be, they just want your opinion, I guess. So one of the questions is from Camila. He's a friend, good friend. So she was asking is that, look, the question is, you know, Uzbeks, well, of course, they want a dignified life. So how can we enable more girls and women into entrepreneurship, business, education, in a space where any sign of empowerment is shamed with the name of Allah, making our development more polarized? I think she means in Uzbekistan, probably. Yeah, so question is, what's your take on this?
Yeah, Uzbekistan is a conservative society, a very conservative society. But, you know, from my own experience, I know that girls are actually very good entrepreneurs. They're very good people, employees, and etc. Some of my best employees are girls. And if they have
organized. They're very organized. Let's put it this way.
Very organized.
Much better than boys.
Yeah, better than boys. They stick to they focus into the project. You know, they're very focused. So I like that. I do really like them. And I think with the time, we need some time. But the girls, they don't need to be afraid. They don't need to care about the other people's opinion. Just do it, you know. You are very smart. You have nothing to be ashamed of. We're equal. Look, we're equal. Mm. You know, that's why they need to go to being. They need to try themselves as an entrepreneur. They need to work. And if there will be a lot of people doing that, you know, the mindset is going to change. Look, you're from Uzbekistan, I'm from Uzbekistan. We remember back in the 90s, if you saw a girl driving a car, it was, it was like nonsense. A lot of girls went to driving a car. Right now, it's okay.
It's normal. Accept it, yeah.
It's normal. So if more people going to be entrepreneurs, the mindset is going to change as well.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a very, very useful insight. So what you're saying is that it's, again, do you remember, like, when you mentioned, like, when you went into with Airbnb to Russian market, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're fighting a cultural issue. So over time, now they're okay with that, because they see the exposure, they see Airbnb is working. I say, I might as well work. Okay, I have to give something to tax, but I guess I got to pay something, you know, to the government. Okay. So, I mean, in the same scenario, I think one of the things she was asking is that, like, my take was on this one. I agree with you 100%. Like, the more examples, like, they see more examples from the girls, you know, ladies, they're doing that, it will be accepted thing. And one of the questions she was asking, like, what really bothered was that, in the name of Allah, I mean, in the name of God, I think it is a reality. Some people, some especially men, what they do is that, don't do that. That's that Islam doesn't want, or God doesn't want. But the reality is that, to be honest with you, like, if you actually go back and learn history, and we see the Islam never condemned entrepreneurship. Even the Prophet was an entrepreneur. He was a tradesman, you know, and his wife was a businessman. And there are a lot of Usman radiallahu anhu, a lot of Sahabas, they were entrepreneurs. They were doing selling and buying stuff, and it's nothing bad about this. And next question was about education, like. Not many people may know this, but first known university, like, in the world, is actually founded by a Muslim lady called Fatima in Morocco. You know what I mean? It's Islam, Muslim heritage. We don't know that. Now, unfortunately, we are in a state where we see the Muslim women sit in the homes, do nothing else. The problem is here, our mentality, not the Islam. Because if you go to the source doesn't say that. You know, that's the problem.
You're definitely more knowledgeable in religion than myself, so yeah. I completely agree with you.
No, absolutely. I'm just telling the facts. Like, that's the way it is. And so what I'm saying is that if the girls, our ladies, learn that, and when someone comes and says, "I'm in Allah," so where is your source? Bring your proof. Don't tell me your opinion. And this is the proof. And I think that's what, just, you know, and this and being example. I know it's gonna be hard. It's not gonna be easy. Like, but that's the only way. Just perseverance, and eventually it goes better. So that was the first question. And the next question was for you. Okay, so one question was, what opportunities do you see as someone who immigrated to U.S. compared to those who were raised here in the U.S.? You know, let's aware of, because this is from Aisha Nicole. I think she's a U.S. citizen. She's asking, like, you're an entrepreneur, right? You're an immigrant entrepreneur. So what are the things you see that...
Is it being live right now?
No, no, it's not live. I asked yesterday, so these are the questions.
Oh, that's interesting. No. Okay. Look, compare as an immigrant, well, we have perspectives. Like we can compare to our own countries, to other countries, and we can bring something new, right? That's why if you look at even the chobani, the yogurt.
Chobani,
the yogurt was built by the immigrant, Turkish immigrant. Yeah. Who brought his yogurt from Turkey and made it very, very, very big thing in the U.S. Would a local guy come up with this kind of idea if he never tried it? No, he wouldn't. Okay, because he never tried it. It was something new. But this guy, he grew up with this yogurt. You know, he thought, okay, why don't I bring it and make it big here? And it worked out. So for us, we can bring something new to this country. And it doesn't have to be super huge, $1 billion businesses or whatever, but we can bring something new. So, and if you're entrepreneurial, you can make money out of it. You can create business out of it.
Absolutely.
So that's what I would say the advantages. Okay. That's advantages. Okay. But and we also have our own disadvantages because we're not a native speakers. We don't have that connections you guys have that the local person has. Mm. And, you know, there's a lot of other disadvantages as well.
But one thing for sure that, like, most of the immigrants, if you look, I mean, not only Uzbekistan, anywhere. So if someone, I mean, that's my, I don't know about you, but that's my personal experience that if someone really goes out of their country, their comfort zone, home to another country, like, they've been already through a lot, right? When you come to a new country, you see that different. You are like, your eyes are open to different perspectives, and you see the opportunity, you just grab it and do it. Like, in many people say, they will not even look at it. For example, if I remember, I came to Denmark in 2003, like, I would go and deliver papers, you know, like in the morning at 4 a.m. And I saw it like, wow, we are paying this so much money. I was comparing to Uzbekistan, but this is what we see. But yeah, you're right. Like, perspective
also
is like,
sometimes. Not everybody, but some, most of the people, as you said, we came out of from our country, from our comfort zone, and we're kind of a, you know, we get filtered, okay, from our own society. The most active people kind
that's
of
right.
came out.
That's right.
And then when we come here, we're being very active. So we need to build a network. We need to build. You know, a future for our kids. So we need to buy a house. So we actually need to work probably double the amount the first 5-10 years than those people who are local. I'm not saying like every local person is granted a privilege. No, by no means. But it's just my observation that we, at the beginning, at least we try more.
That's right. Absolutely. Thank you. So one more, I think this is the last question, is that the question is, how should we support other entrepreneurs while maintaining our own success, business success?
How do we need to support other businesses while maintaining our...
Yeah, how support other entrepreneurs while maintaining our own business success?
I do have an answer for that. Give them a small projects, you know, give them a small projects. That's it. If I have a business and it's growing, I'm doing well, then there's probably some sort of services that I need to get or I can outsource. And that's how you could do that. Let's say you are providing a podcast service or whatever, I don't know, whatever, or video editing service. I could do it in-house myself, or I could just give it to you. If you're good at that, why not? I just give it to you. This is how I support you.
Absolutely. That's a good advice.
And you can support with advices, but then at the end of the day, you know, everything is related to financial aspects. So the best thing is to help them with the businesses.
I agree. That's a very good advice. Very good advice. So, yeah, I think this was the main of the question. So is there a question, is there a thing I should have asked, but I did not ask, and you would like to ask yourself an answer as the last one?
No, I actually would love to ask you because I just became, I was admitted to Forbes Tech Council, and I need to come up with the article. I'm thinking, well, what am I going to do now? I'm not a big writer. So I would love your audience, if they watch this podcast,
sure,
please tell me what you guys are interested in, because I don't want to come up with something maybe not with something that is not interesting. So if you guys help me out with the first article, that would be good.
Okay, so you're looking for like what people are interested in.
Has to be very technological, you know, technology related. So and I'm going to be publishing it.
Okay, sure. We'll ask the network and see what they say.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be awesome.
Having said that, Babir, thank you very much for your time. And until we see you next time. Assalamu alaikum.
Thank you.